Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Freedom of Species would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional owners of the land on which we broadcast today. We pay our respect to the elders of all of the lands on which we meet across Australia.
Hello, welcome to Freedom of Species. Sorry about that. You heard a little bit of a pre-recorded show. Welcome to the show. I'm Nick and I'm hosting Freedom of Species today. We're the show that brings animal advocacy to the airwaves of 3CR Community Radio. And you just heard Sally with Out of the Pan. Make sure you check that out, 12 till 1 every Sunday. That was a news roundup covering all different topics. Wide range, even experiences of being in Russia and, attitudes towards, different groups there. Very interesting show. Make sure you check out of the Pan every Sunday, 12 till 1. And Sally finished off with the show, with a song, 50 Years by Uncanny X-Men. So, yeah, I did mention I was hosting today, but it's actually going to be more Lottie hosting today, and she is over the phone. So let's put Lottie, are you with us, Lottie, hopefully?
Yes, can you hear me okay?
We can, yeah, it's all good. So, Lottie is unfortunately feeling unwell, so he's joining us over the phone today, but he's really going to be running the show mostly today. So do you want to talk a little bit about the topic for today?
Yeah, so today we're going to talk about different tactics for animal liberation activism. We're going to dig a bit deeper into some concepts, diversity of tactics, and the radical flank effect that we covered in a previous episode on May 31st. That episode was called Vegan Stereotypes in Defense of the Preachy Vegan. So if you're interested in these topics we talked about today, you might want to go back and listen to that last episode as well. I'm happy to kick off, Nick.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm not sure if you're going to start off with what the radical flank effect is. I know Sally mentioned being interested to know what that is all about. Wherever you want to start.
Yeah, I'll define those concepts. I think I'll start with diversity of tactics. So this is a social phenomenon that came about in the civil rights movement in the USA in the 1960s. So to kind of demonstrate what this kind of concept means, I'm going to quote Malcolm X. He said this in a speech called The Black Revolution in 1964. So he said, "Our people have made the mistake of confusing the methods with the objectives. As long as we agree on objectives, we should never fall out with each other just because we believe in different methods or tactics or strategy to reach a common goal." And I think, you know, this, coming about in the civil rights movement, I think animal rights movement can kind of learn from that particular movement, other social movements that have happened over the years in terms of how they've gone about kind of fighting for their goals.
Absolutely.
So the civil rights movement in the USA, they used a diversity of tactics fighting against anti-racism, fighting against racism and against segregation. So some of the tactics that they used included economic boycotts, sit-ins, mass marches, picketing. They strove to get mass arrests to fill the local jails, to kind of overfill them so that they couldn't kind of overwhelm the jails, and they also worked on attracting positive media coverage to generate favourable public opinion. Another, I guess, thread or way we can think about it is that they use an innovation of tactics. So this is a concept where you're tailoring your tactics to the context that you're in, not just using the kind of the same old tried and true tactics over and over again. And a benefit to this is that you're kind of keeping institutions or whoever you're kind of targeting, you're keeping them on their feet so that they're not really able to counter your actions with the same strategies all the time. And then on top of that, you're kind of an innovation in the tactics you use might be able to generate more ongoing media attention and public interest rather than just kind of, using the same tactics over and over again where the public can kind of lose interest after a while. Mm-hmm. So a more maybe contemporary example of innovation of tactics that this made me think of was school strikes for climate. So I think in 2018 or so when that began, that made quite a splash in the media and had pretty good momentum for a while. I think that was, quite an innovative way of getting the media and public attention. Inevitably the media attention over that, as far as I can see, kind of died down after a while. Something that's innovative in the first place is just necessarily not going to be innovative after a while. And so that kind of calls for like constantly thinking about innovative tactics. Wanted to get your thoughts, Nick, if you've kind of got like examples you've thought of or if that kind of fits with your view of things.
Yeah, I was reading last night, actually, this is an article I came across before, but it's Wave of Contentions, Relations Among Radical, Moderate and Conservative Movement Organizations. That's by Belinda Robnett, Carol Glasser and Rebecca Trammell. Carol Glasser in particular, I know through Critical Animal Studies work. But that was quite an interesting article because they were talking about, there's the kind of different ways we can divide social movements, and we'll probably talk about this more when it comes to talking about the radical flank effect. But the way they divided up movements was into radical, moderate and conservative flanks. So it was kind of interesting hearing the civil rights movement was one example they wrote about, and it was quite interesting hearing Martin Luther King, who they put in the moderate flank, and how he was kind of, sort of how the moderate flank can kind of work between the radical and the conservative, but it's kind of hard to walk both those lines. So I guess the radical would be like the, Malcolm X, or like the Black Panther Party would be the radical aspect. And they also mentioned some more conservative organizations. But those sort of, I guess, both tensions, but also examples of those organizations working together, which kind of speaks to that Malcolm X quote you gave, where sometimes movements can have different tactics, but working together, doing those different tactics as they share the same or at least similar goals.
When I was kind of reading up on this, it something I came across is that like unity in a movement seems to be considered quite important for a successful movement. And I think there's a bit of a tension there sometimes as to whether those different flanks are united in terms of what they're working for, even if they're using different tactics. So I think that can be kind of like a bit of a challenge that comes up sometimes, and that activists should probably be aware of in like taking advantage of the diversity of tactics when it's there, but trying to stay united in your goal. And I don't think, I think it's inevitable that sometimes movements aren't going to be optimal in being united, especially if there's like a conservative and radical flank trying to work together. Which, to be honest, when I was reading up on this, I saw a lot more written about like moderate versus radical flank, but I really didn't see much about conservative flank. So that like definitely adds a new dynamic. And probably like challenge in terms of keeping everyone united.
Yeah, well, I guess that was sort of the critique of that article, that sort of radical versus moderate dichotomy maybe doesn't give the full context of what is going on. So they also cover the animal movement as well. And in that case, they gave the examples of the Animal Liberation Front as the radical, and that's sort of not really an organization but more tactics where people break the law on behalf of animals. That was the radical. PETA was the moderate. This is the US context. PETA was the moderate, and the Humane Society of the United States was the conservative. And I do think there are, there are similarities between PETA and Humane Society, but there definitely are. I also think there's quite different. So, for example, while PETA, at least previously, actually openly supported the Animal Liberation Front in previous years, they don't anymore. But yeah, there was examples of Humane Society actually like supporting like ag gag, like laws that actually, you know, impose really harsh penalties on people breaking the law on behalf of animals and trespassing to get footage of slaughterhouses and factory farms and those kind of things, and like actively trying to help law enforcement go against people breaking the law and that kind of thing. So that, I guess that's the conservative thing of like not just not necessarily being radical, but being very anti-radical, I guess, was the sort of the distinction they made between the Humane Society and PETA.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think from my knowledge of PETA, like I agree they're much more like quite mainstream. I think that are they pretty radical in their ask? Like they are for veganism, right?
Yeah, yeah, they are. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you can make a bit of a distinction between moderate versus radical in like your ask. So I don't know much about the Humane Society, but their name kind of suggests that there might be more about like animal welfare, you know, bigger cages for animals and things like that, but not necessarily ending animal, you know, consumption and cruelty and commodification. So that's like, yeah, moderate versus radical in your ask, and then that you can think of it as like being moderate versus radical in like your tactics, so like what you're doing to kind of reach that goal.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true, and I think PETA's, you know, sort of central slogan of animals are not ours is definitely an animal rights goal, as opposed to Humane Society is very much, as you say, focused on animal welfare and sort of better treatment for animals rather than sort of challenging their use and exploitation. There definitely have been examples of PETA embracing like welfare reform, for example. Yeah, they work with KFC to sort of add vegan options, which is kind of consistent with the animal rights goal, but also talk about like, you know, controlled atmosphere killing and sort of work on like different ways of killing chickens as well.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, Glass's work definitely looks a lot into PETA becoming more moderate in their tactics, both in terms of, again, that there's examples going back a few decades in 1990 of having like a full page ad in support of the Animal Liberation Front. Yeah. And that is definitely that kind of thing. But also a lot of that in terms of tactically, they often used to support like things like sit-ins and disruptions and those kind of more radical actions, whereas it now might be, yes, still focused on veganism, but more about like celebrities being vegan or like consumer-based activism, those kind of things. So yeah, not so much their ideology, but more the tactics is what Glasser has argued has kind of become more moderate over the years.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I might go ahead and define like the radical flank effect.
Go ahead.
You can still hear me. I just had a beep.
Yep. All good. Yep. No issues. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So the radical flank effect, this was coined by American sociologist Herbert Haynes in 1984 when he was researching the American civil rights movement. And his research found that moderate factions of the movement, such as those fronted by Martin Luther King Jr., started receiving record high financial contributions following riots from the movement's more militant factions. So when we're talking about radical flank effects, we can think of, to think of it crudely, positive radical flank effects, which is where the radical flanks of social movements might increase support for the more moderate factions. And then on the other hand, there might be negative radical flank effects, whereby the more radical flanks might reduce support for the moderate factions. So to kind of dig into this a bit deeper, I came across a review article looking into radical flank effects. So this article was called Rebels with a Cause, Public Attitudes on Radical Protest Actions, a Review of Empirical Evidence of Radical Flank Effects. This review article was published by Chamberlain and Madsen in 2025, and I'll link to this in the show notes for the podcast version. So what they found in this review article, they looked across many different social movements, including some animal movements evidence, and I'll go into those a bit more, but they had a broader view across different social movements. So, they found that across different social movements, radical factions had radical flank effects, and sometimes this is positive, sometimes this is negative. As you might expect, there isn't just one way that things can go in the world. What they did find was a general pattern is that when a radical flank uses non-violence tactics, this seems to be largely associated with positive radical flank effects. So I think generally, it seems pretty safe that if a more radical flank, as long as they're being non-violent, they're probably going to have more positive than any negative effects on the more radical, on the more moderate flanks kind of goals. In this review article, they kind of found that violent tactics are a bit trickier. They've been associated both with positive and negative effects. I don't think we can really go into kind of the nuance of all of that in this episode. So some examples of some of the studies that they reviewed and kind of synthesized. So I thought it was quite interesting that there were two experimental studies that they reviewed. These were by Simpson and colleagues and Dash and colleagues. So these two studies independently used like an experimental approach with their participants. So what they did was they presented the research participants with a fictitious activist group. So they might have presented like fictitious newspaper articles or mission statements from an organization. And then what they did was they manipulated between different participants in the study whether this first group that they were presented with was to be considered radical or moderate, just based on the tactics that they used. Then they presented each participant with a second activist group, and that was always a moderate group. So, yeah, just to sum up, half the research participants were presented with a moderate group and a moderate group, and then half with a radical group and a moderate group. So what they found was that both studies found that the participants' support for the moderate group was stronger if they had previously been presented with a radical group. So it kind of suggests that if someone's kind of given that contrast of like, well, this is a more radical group that may be a bit too radical for me, and this is a moderate group, I'm going to be more supportive of that moderate group. Whereas if the two groups that they're presented with are moderate, there isn't really that contrast for them to, that strong contrast for them to make. So they're not necessarily going to go for that moderate, that second moderate group as much, even though the second moderate group is identical between the two conditions.
Yeah, and I guess I can talk a bit about how that might sort of work in the animal movement in both directions. So, yeah, again, with radical groups, again, not really groups, but radical action. So, again, people breaking the law on behalf of animals, that could be something like stealing animals because they're considered property, but like rescuing animals, or it could be, you know, graffitiing a place that uses animals or something like that. In some way, sort of breaking the law on behalf of animals, but in a way that is not directly violent, to get back to your other point, like that can make PETA seem more, you know, respectable and moderate because they're talking about, you know, consumer-based advocacy and those kind of things rather than illegal actions. And I guess on the flip side, the negative radical flank effect, for example, can be the way that those actions from the radical flank actually, that sort of negative perception of the radical thing actually extends to the more moderate organization. So, for example, by the late 1990s, PETA was actually labeled a terrorist organization in the mainstream news media. Sort of 90s and early 2000s, and even more moderate organizations than PETA. So it was like that idea of that sort of more radical and legal actions from the radical flank actually sort of at least in the media, sort of some media coverage sort of like tarnished the whole movement as well. And that would be perhaps an example of the negative radical flank as well going on. I did want to as well mention, this is nothing to do with radical flank effect, but there's actually an article on queer theory from Gail Rubin. But anyway, there was an interesting quote, which I think relates. So she said, whenever there is polarization, there is an unhappy tendency to think the truth lies somewhere in between. And I think that is sort of a wide, I don't like that tendency, but I also acknowledge that it does exist on a pretty broad scale. The idea that here are these two competing positions, you know, maybe they're somewhat right and there's, you know, a bit of both sides and the truth's got to be somewhere in the middle. And to get back to your example about the sort of the moderate and radical, we can get this kind of thing where it's like, radical animal rights organization, and then you maybe have like, you know, an anti-animal rights position, and then you sort of have, because of that radical thing, you have a group more like a moderate position, maybe in Australian context, like Animals Australia, for example. They become the sort of middle ground, respectable position where it's like, yeah, it's not radical, but it's like, yeah, that sort of pro-animal position becomes the middle ground position which people can gravitate towards.
Yeah, exactly. I think that, I think that probably can explain like part of what's going on. And I guess, you know, going back to what you said about the potentially negative radical flank effect example that you gave, I guess what this review article, you know, overall found is that if radical flanks are non-violent, there might be like kind of instances of potentially like episodes of what seems to be a negative effect, but it does seem that like over time and in general, you're probably going to get larger positive radical flank effects than negative. So I think that does speak to the argument that, you know, radical flanks are kind of needed for the movement and are probably going to be positive on the movement. Again, with the caveat that, like, violence tactics then just add in, like, a bit of uncertainty on that.
Maybe we'll go to our first song and then continue after that.
Yeah, sounds good. Given that we're kind of drawing on some USA civil rights movement kind of history in this episode, I've picked three songs for this episode that kind of came about in that context. So the first one is Strange Fruit by Billie Holiday. This was a protest poem, speaking out against lynchings of African Americans. This was published in 1937 by Abel Mirapol, and then the song was recorded in 1939 by Billie Holiday.
All right, and if you could just hang on the line, Lottie, you'll be on hold during the break, but I will be back with you in a few minutes.
Yep.
And right. You're listening to Freedom of Species on 3CR.
3CR celebrating 50 years.
This June we'll be asking for your donations to support 3CR.
Your donation during Radiothon keeps the station radical and enables us to give voice to our community for another year.
All donations over $2 are tax deductible.
To donate, go to 3cr.org.au. Show your support by donating this June.
3CR celebrating 50 years.
Freedom of Species would like to thank Project Fresh Start for their financial support of this program. Project Fresh Start provides free plant-based food to the community, with a focus on providing healthy, fresh plant-based food and education around healthy eating and living in a way that sustains the individual, the community, the animals, and the planet. To find out more about our community lunches and programs, check out projectfreshstart.org.au.
celebrating 50 years of 3CR on Saturday, the 4th of July at Collingwood Town Hall. There'll be stalls, displays, great food, performances, activities, prizes, and so much more. It's a birthday for us, and we can't wait to celebrate with you. Saturday, the 4th of July, Collingwood Town Hall, 11 a.m. till 4 p.m. Bring your family, tell your friends, all are welcome. 3CR, celebrating 50 years.
Let us know you're coming. Go to Humanitix and search for 3CR to RSVP.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species on 3CR Community Radio. On the show today, we're talking about the radical flank effect and social movements and diversity of tactics in the animal movement, but also other movements, including the civil rights movement in the US historically. Maybe I'll put Lottie back on. Are you with us, Lottie?
Yep.
Yep. Okay, great. So I just want to maybe quickly mention before we get back into the discussion. Or do you want to mention the details of the song, Lottie?
Oh, yeah, that was Strange Fruit by Billie Holiday.
Yeah, and you heard the announcement for the 50th birthday for 3CR. So just a reminder of those details. That is Saturday, 4th of July, 11 a.m. till 4 p.m. at Collingwood Town Hall. Free event that will have stalls, including a Freedom of Species stall. We're actually going to do a in-person animal trivia thing. So you can drop by our stall and say hi. We'll have some 3CR stickers and some other Freedom of Species stuff as well. There'll be music, food, activities, a raffle, posters, photos from across the five decades that 3CR has been on air. So hopefully see you there, and you can find more details about the event on the 3CR website, 3cr.org.au. I'll hand it back to Lottie to kick off the next part of the discussion.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. Yeah, so I think, I was just wanting to discuss a bit more, and I think we've touched on it. So given that it seems like radical flanks tend to have positive effects on more moderate movements, I guess this can kind of lead us to question, though, well, does the success of a moderate faction actually equal success for the radical flank? So if what we're kind of finding over time is that, like, when there's a radical flank, that tends to lead to success for that moderate movement, should the radical flank kind of consider that actual success? And so for us as vegans and animal rights activists, we can kind of think about, well, does improvements to animal welfare does that actually equal success for our movement? So if chickens are kept in larger cages, does that mean is that kind of leading us on the path to animal justice, or does that just kind of legitimize the status quo that it's okay to keep chickens in cages? And look, their welfare is better than it used to be, so that's okay, you can keep eating eggs and chickens. I guess, did you kind of have initial thoughts on that, Nick, that we didn't kind of already cover?
Yeah, I guess I would have two thoughts on that. And I guess maybe I'll go back to Peter, and I realize my points have been quite US-centric, and that's just because I have read quite a bit of Carol Glass's work and she is based in the US. But maybe I'll give an Australian example. I think the Dominion activists, they've faced a lot of legal issues for trespassing and that kind of thing, and documenting conditions. The sort of legal issues would be an example of, like, maybe a more radical organization in Australia. There was also the disruption in 2019 where they shut down the Swanson Street. That would be an example. And again, Animal Australia may be a more moderate, and maybe even like RSPCA would maybe be the conservative flank. If they're even considered the same movement, that's another discussion. But an example, which again is going back to Peter as well. So I mentioned Peter, for example, this was quite a few years ago, but working back to they're working with KFC. And so there was two things they did with KFC, or two primary things. One was changing their method of killing to controlled atmosphere killing, where they're basically like gassed to death was the sort of the change they made, which, yeah, there was also debates about that, whether it was actually an improved method of killing from a welfare perspective. But yeah, that's not my area of expertise. But they also work with KFC to get a vegan option, like a vegan chicken alternative on their menu. And I guess I see, like, I see one of those as productive and one not so much. So I think, I guess my concern with the discussion about like killing animals better, that kind of thing, it just is sort of meeting society where it's at, but it's not changing the discussion from, you know, how we're killing animals to why we're killing animals, I guess. So I see that as less connected to the goals of the radical animal rights position. But I do see, as much as like more radical organizations are not going to make, you know, having a vegan option at KFC a primary goal, and it's certainly not, you know, I'm not going to celebrate that as, oh, now we've won because KFC has a vegan option or did in the US or whatever it was. But I do see that as at least somewhat consistent in terms of, for example, let's take a, you know, a teenager who wants to kind of like get on with their friends and like, you know, eat out with their friends. Like, I do think having a vegan option at KFC or any fast food place that you know, slaughters a lot of animals is an overall positive thing, as much as I'm not overly excited about it. So I do see that as more consistent. So I see things like, you know, more reformist things of like getting more vegan options as helpful to the radical effect, yeah, radical movements who are trying to end these industries that kind of use and slaughter animals for profit altogether. But I see the welfare improvements as, well, one, there's a question of whether they're improvements, but also I don't see them as consistent. There was a study quite a few years ago which highlighted that when there was like welfare, like TV coverage of animal welfare on TV, like animal consumption decline, and that's often used by those arguing for that as like a positive thing. And others said there were methodological issues with the study, which I haven't looked into, so I can't comment on either way. But yeah, again, I think it depends what the specifically what the more moderate wins are in terms of how consistent it will be with making gains that could help the radical aspects.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. A concept that's used largely in like prison abolition work is the idea of non-reformist reforms versus reformist reforms. Mm. So that's kind of thinking about like, is this like accepting that changes are going to come incrementally, but thinking about, like, does this incremental change kind of just reinforce the status quo, or does it move us closer to our goal? And, yeah, I think I agree with you that it seems easier to see that, like, adding a vegan option to a menu is, you know, potentially working closer to that goal of, like, making veganism easier for people and just getting more people thinking about it. Compared to, yeah, those more kind of like welfarist changes, especially if those like welfarist changes aren't kind of don't come kind of side by side with the narrative of like, you know, our ultimate goal is ending like animal consumption.
Yeah, I think like the prison abolition is a really useful example, because like I could think of, for example, like there's a reform, and there was a lot of discussions around this when, you know, Black Lives Matter was like a huge part of the public conversation for a little while there, where it was like you might, for example, have a reform which is like less spending on police and like punitive approaches that end up with more people in prison, and more money instead directed, like tipping the scales to more money towards social workers or, you know, welfare payments and social security and those kind of things, which actually like stop these problems emerging in the first place. And I would imagine most prison abolitionists, as much as that in itself doesn't end prisons, it's kind of like tipping the scales away from prisons and more towards dealing with harm in the community in more constructive and less punitive ways. And I think
ways that like ways that align with your values in the first place.
Exactly. And I kind of see the same as like, like with animal rights as well. It's like if we're talking about like, you know, increasing the size of the prisoner's cage or something like that, or the size of like, you know, the cage of an animal who's been used for meat or dairy or whatever else, like that is kind of within the framework of kind of how do we use them. But like, I guess to go back to the example of the, like, you know, tipping the scales, it's like, I think like tipping the scales towards more like plant-based products over animal products, even if it isn't like everything going vegan, I think is still positive. So if there's, for example, we've spoken about campaigns to make institutions, like let's take universities, for example, to get like more vegan options within universities, for example, but all kinds of institutions, like, and that's often on environmental grounds, but having more like vegan options within universities or other institutions, that makes those who are advocating for veganism, like it makes it more possible for people to choose that more, that sort of, more sort of radical option of eating completely vegan.
Another thought I had on this question of like, you know, reforms and whether that means success for radicals, I guess, I think we kind of need to accept to some extent that welfarist factions and like actions are probably going to be inevitable. And so something that I kind of came across reading up on this and in that review by Chamberlain and Madsen was that, you know, if nothing else, animal liberation activists or, you know, the more radical flank could at least try and momentum from those more moderate changes that happen. So, you know, if there's like a, you know, a change where animals need to be kept in larger cages, you know, what's done is done, but animal liberation activists could kind of like seize momentum or like media attention from that to then try and like redirect public, you know, public knowledge and things like that to okay, that was, you know, that happened, that's good, but, you know, we could also be thinking about not eating chickens at all and, like, alternatives to eating chickens and eggs and things like that. So I think that might be a, yeah, I guess something to keep in mind when, if we're kind of upset or disillusioned by these, like, more welfarist changes happening, that may be, like, a more a positive approach we can take to in response to that.
Yeah, and I think you made the point about unity in the movement before, and I feel like, while like I think I overall support that, but I do feel that concept of unity is misused a bit in the animal movement in terms of interpreted as meaning no critical discussion around tactics, and I've definitely heard that. Like in the US Animal Rights Conference, for example, people reporting back on that and basically saying it's just a show and tell. So here's what our organization did this year, and then the next organization, here's what we did for this year. And there's no actual critical discussion. And sometimes when there is, people, people sort of dismiss that as infighting. So any critical discussion, could we be doing this? Could we be more effective? How does this fit in? Just anything like that is dismissed as infighting and going against that unity. But I guess from the other side, I would also say that I've also heard people saying like welfare activism. So again, that could be, for example, like, bigger cages for animals or encouraging a company to switch over free range eggs rather than caged eggs. Those kind of things would all be welfare reforms. Like that is a tactic. And the person was saying, well, I disagree with that tactic, but either way, like we are on the same side in terms of we do want the same things and we can have a critical discussion about tactics, but still not necessarily view those people as like the worst in the world. It's just like we can still we can still have our vegan cupcakes together at the conference, but have those critical discussions while acknowledging we're kind of wanting the same thing, but having different tactics.
I think definitely that's true. There needs to be space for the critical discussion, and it irritates me when any kind of discussion like that is just kind of shut down as like, well, that's infighting. This makes us look bad to non-vegans or, you know, the public that we can't even have this discussion in the first place. Like, I don't think that's constructive. Yeah, and I agree with you that I think, yeah, maybe to avoid the kind of image of, like, that you're infighting is kind of acknowledging that, like, yeah, we're working for the same goal of animal liberation, or, you know, what's better for animals. We disagree with some of the approaches, but, like, ultimately we're on the same side.
Mm-hmm. We better have another song. Do you want to announce the next song?
Yes. So the next song is called A Change Is Gonna Come by Sam Cooke. This was also written by Sam Cooke and released in 1964. He wrote this about his own experiences of racism and kind of tied that into the civil rights movement going on at the time.
And, yeah, once again, Lottie, if you hang around on the phone and put you on hold, and we'll be back with the final section after this song. You're listening to Freedom of Species on 3CR.
Freedom of Species thanks Animal Free Science Advocacy for their financial support of this program. Animal Free Science Advocacy works to create a future where no animals are harmed in the name of science, and scientific progress is advanced through animal-free research methods. Become a member today by visiting animalfreesci.org.au. That's animalfreesci.org.au.
Every day, people in prisons across Australia are subjected to strip searching. It is an unnecessary, degrading, and deeply harmful practice that must end. It involves a person literally being stripped of their dignity, forced to remove their clothing for their bodies to be inspected by prison guards, being forced to submit to humiliating requests like bending, squatting, and spreading their legs. In many prisons, people are subjected to this repeatedly and routinely. Children as young as 10 years old are being forced to remove their clothes and have their bodies inspected by adults. We're calling on the federal government to stop state-sanctioned violence by ending the routine, unregulated use of strip searching in prisons across Australia. Go to endstripsearching.com. Together, we can demand a system that upholds dignity, safety, and human rights. Fig Jam is a 3CR supporter.
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
This June, we'll be asking for your donations to support 3CR.
Your donation during Radiothon keeps the station radical and enables us to give voice to our community for another year.
All donations over $2 are tax deductible.
To donate, go to 3cr.org.au. Show your support by donating this June.
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
Wondering how to pay your donation to 3CR Radiothon? It's easy. You can pay online at 3cr.org.au or call us any weekday with your credit card details on 03 9419 8377. You can also come into the station at 21 Smith Street, Fitzroy during office hours and pay by cash or card. Or simply post your cheque or money order to PO Box 1277, Collingwood 3066. And be sure to tell us which program you'd like your donation to go to.
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species on 3CR Radical Radio. You just heard an announcement about, donating to the Radiothon. Thanks so much to those who have already donated. We're very close to reaching our target. I think we're somewhere around 90%. I'll put Lottie back off of mute because I think Lottie's maybe been posting about this on social media a little bit. You can maybe Lottie can put a link to the Give Now link in the podcast descriptions for those who listen to the podcast version. If anyone wants to make any donation, help us get over the line for our target and also help help our help keep our show going and help keep 3CR going as well. You can also go to 3cr.org.au and you'll find the details there. And again, you can nominate Freedom of Species as a show you want to support if that is where you want your donation to go. Yeah, anything, I think you've been posting about on social media, Lottie, anything you want to say about that?
Yeah, I'll definitely add the give now in the show notes.
Yeah.
Last I heard, which might have been 1 or 2 weeks ago, but I think we were about $200 under target. I don't know if we've gotten an update since then, but yeah, we're pretty close. So it'd be great if you enjoy the show, donate, keep this show and 3CR on air, and that'd be really exciting if we reach our goals.
Yeah. All right, I'll hand it over to Lottie to kick off the final section, which will be quite a short one.
yeah, just in the last minute. So just wanted to say the song we just listened to was The Change Is Gonna Come by Sam Cooke. These songs won't be on the podcast version, but go ahead and, listen to those songs. Go and find those songs if you're interested. For the last few minutes, I wanted to talk about a concept that came up when thinking about radical flank effects, positive or negative. Some writers that I was reading kind of were saying this is like a bit of a simplistic way of thinking about it. In reality, different flanks are going to have kind of like they're going to complement each other over time. It's not easy to say if they have like a wholly positive or negative effect. One way they put it was a good cop, bad cop dynamic, which I think is a bit unfortunate given that we're anti-cops, anti-prisons here. But I think it is a bit of a metaphor that we can kind of understand. So I wanted to just think about like, well, what about when we as, you know, total liberation vegans are the good cops, or, you know, maybe the moderates as opposed to the radicals or the bad cops. So, you know, so far we've been talking about thinking of ourselves as the radical or bad cop faction, once fighting for veganism, animal liberation and animal welfare as more of the moderate side. I think there are aspects to some kinds of veganism that get public disapproval, and that maybe we as total liberation vegans need to think about kind of how to grapple with that and how to respond to that. And given what you said, Nick, I think maybe we can think of this as maybe a conservative flank effect, and how to deal with that. So some examples I have are like single issue veganism that might be like sexist, racist, Zionist, things like that. There are definitely some like anti-fat and kind of diet culture types of veganism. These factions are rightly perceived, you know, like get public disapproval and perceived as unethical to some extent. So learning from like the radical flank effect, and especially if like radical flanks have done like violence tactics that get public disapproval, the evidence seems to show that more moderate flanks distancing themselves from those tactics tends to gain more support rather than if a moderate flank kind of supports the violent tactics. So I think that maybe what we can, you know, like consider from this is that it probably is positive, and positive strategically, and probably also just the right thing to do for us to distance ourselves from unethical sides of veganism. You know, if we see sexism, racism, anti-fatness kind of popping up in veganism, I think it's probably positive to publicly distance ourselves from those kinds of sentiments. And that, you know, is potentially gonna lead to our faction of veganism gaining more support than if we were to just side with or just kind of be uncritical of those more problematic sides of veganism. I think this kind of comes back to the kind of infighting versus like unity conundrum I think we can, you know, we can continue to, like, you know, just say, state that our objective is animal liberation, call people in, not just, not kind of, you know, resort to kind of fighting kind of thing, but just, you know, publicly state what we stand for and what we don't. I think it's, you know, potentially it's important to talk about veganism as an ethical framework that's about doing no harm, and kind of draw on how, you know, sexism, racism, anti-fatness, these are counter to vegan ethics. And that's kind of, you know, we're kind of demonstrating a kind of like ethical consistency in our vegan practice and activism. Do you have any thoughts on that, Nick?
No, I think that's right. As you say, philosophically, I think it's right. But as you say, practically, I guess if we're, as more total liberation activists, are trying to create coalitions with, you know, feminist movements and queer movements and anti-racist movements and prison abolition movements and these kind of progressive movements, it's also strategic, like not just philosophically correct or what we agree with, but also practical to challenge that kind of activism as well in terms of making those coalitions.
Yeah, exactly.
We better wrap things up. So Rotations is coming up next, so stay tuned for Rotations. Hear some more music from different 3CR presenters, different genres, different themes. Stay tuned for that, and I'll hand over to Lottie to introduce the final song.
Yep, so this last song is called Mississippi Goddamn by Nina Simone. Nina Simone wrote and performed this, released it in 1964. She wrote it about the racially motivated murders of Emmett Till and Medgar Evers in Mississippi and the 16th Street Baptist Church bombing in Birmingham, Alabama, which killed 4 black children. So this is another protest song for the civil rights movement in the USA.
All right. Well, thanks for putting everything together, Lottie.
Yep, no worries.
All right.
Thank you.
Stay tuned for Rotations. See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.